broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
We have a series of meetings going on.
Well, we shouldn't have caved in on this, and I quite frankly,
I am frustrated. This is my son.
As Christians, we should be more concerned about putting Christ in people's heart.
Play Nevada.
And so I think the president is a moron.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. News talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch. And where through the looking glass we go every night. Go places other talk shows wish they could go to, but they cannot. No. Coming up tonight on our show, the term Christmas is at the center of a controversy in a North Carolina school district and in a Tulsa parade. Democrats push back at President Obama's tax compromise. Elizabeth Edwards has lost her battle with cancer. Margaret Gray and Raj Fineen will be our special guests this evening. We've got Margaret Gray on the line here in a moment to talk about Elizabeth Edwards. And again, this very, very sad, I think a very, very sad moment, Elizabeth Edwards losing her battle. What a tough couple of years, three, four years that woman had leading up to this point. So we'll talk with Margaret about that. And then Raj Fineen, who is the CFO of a major company in the Valley, will be talking about pay raises for our military. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. And our affiliate spotlight tonight on WWRL 1600 AM in New York City and on KFLS 1450 AM in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Two great stations on the Phil Hendry Show radio network, and of course two stations that get it, and we appreciate it very, very much. So Elizabeth Edwards has indeed lost her fight with cancer. She has died at the age of 61. In a moment, we'll have Margaret Gray on the line with us here. In a June 2007 interview with Larry King, Elizabeth Edwards was asked what she would say to other cancer patients.
As long as you're walking around, as long as you're not dead now, then you're alive. And
look in the mirror.
That's right.
You're alive.
You're alive, and, you know, don't spend your time worrying about when it is you're going to die. Spend your time worrying about how is you're going to live today.
Elizabeth Edwards, who was the estranged wife of 2004 vice presidential candidate and former North Carolina Senator John Edwards, died on Tuesday after a lengthy battle with cancer. She was 61 years of age. That would be early this morning because we did report it last night in the final hour of our radio show here on the West Coast. She died at the family home in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, according to a statement released by the family. And the statement reads as follows. Today, we've lost the comfort of Elizabeth's presence, but she remains the heart of this family. We love her, and we will never know anyone more inspiring or full of life. She was diagnosed with breast cancer shortly after her husband lost his bid for the vice presidency in 2004. And it was later revealed that she knew before the election she might have cancer, but she shielded her husband from the news during the campaign. She immediately underwent treatment, and the cancer was believed to be in remission. But it was not, it got worse, it metastasized to the bones and then eventually to the liver. Margaret, thanks for joining us tonight. It's you know, whether you voted for John Edwards or whether you liked Elizabeth Edwards or anything, you know, it's sad.
So, you know, you said it very, very well when you said what the last few years for this woman must have been like. I think of strength.
Right.
When I think of Elizabeth Edwards, I think of a very, very strong woman. And I think we owe it to ourselves, and I'm speaking now very selfishly. I'm speaking as a Democrat. We owe it to ourselves to take the legacy, the mantle, to take the Elizabeth Edwards story, really, and let's take this out on the road and do some fundraising for the Democratic Party. Because, and I say this still with the greatest of respect, and I don't know, you might not like what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Let's face it, had the Obama health care initiative not been blocked by Republicans, that girl might be alive today.
No. I can't. No, we can't do that. You don't know that. First of all, this is a family that had resources. This was a family that had money. You know.
No, I understand that, but I don't know what the possibilities would have been. I don't know what the possibilities for Elizabeth Edwards would have been had the Obama health care plan been passed in all of its permutations.
It doesn't. The Obama health care, I don't mean to get into an argument with you because we do want to talk about Elizabeth Edwards, but the Obama health care plan has nothing to do with the passing of Elizabeth Edwards, because again, this was a family with resources. They had money, they had doctors, they had the best. When we talk about the Obama health care plan, we're talking about people, or any health care plan, we're talking about people that cannot afford it.
Yes, I'm listening to you, Phil, and you'll notice I'm keeping my own counsel. You're right about that, but I'm sure that had the Obama health care plan been passed intact, that Elizabeth Edwards might have opted to use it as a symbol of what can be done. And
well, I don't even know that she could have done that, considering the fact that financially she would not have qualified, you know.
But being the wife of a man who had run for president of the United States, there might have been a provision to opt her into the plan, in which case she would have been a living symbol of what comprehensive health care nationally could be for millions of Americans. And that's what I think you're missing, and I wish you were not missing it, because if you could go with me on this, we could be presenting a united front this evening to your listeners to say Elizabeth Edwards was a strong woman, regardless of what you thought of her politically. And she could be with us today. She could be alive today. Were we able to overcome the Republicans?
I can't agree with that.
You can't agree with it?
No, I can't agree with that. I can't agree with that at all. I won't do that and say that Elizabeth Edwards would be here today, you know.
Well, Phil, in honor of the passing of this great woman, in memory of her, I'm not going to argue with you, but there are a million different arguments I could give you that would really just destroy your position.
Margaret, that may well be, okay? I don't think so. I'm not about to sit here and say that Elizabeth Edwards died because of Republicans.
No, I'm not saying that at all.
Well, it sounds that way to me. It sounds to me like you said that she would have opted into the plan.
I'm saying that it would have been an option for her had it not been blocked by the obstinate Republican Party. But that's neither here nor there. What I really want to say to all Democrats tonight, to anyone that loved Elizabeth Edwards, let's use this terribly sad occasion to get out there and raise money on behalf of the Democratic Party. I think Elizabeth would want us to use her passing as a way to educate people and to say, look what we can do. Look what we can do. Let's raise money. I'm not with you anymore. I wish I was. But the fight against the Republicans, and I think, Phil, that you can agree with this, the fight against the Republicans just drained her of her strength. It drained her of her health.
No, I can't agree with that.
Why could you not even agree with that?
Because of the fact that this is a sick woman. She had cancer. And so that was the problem that she had.
Well, hold on for a minute. You can't have it both ways. You're saying to me that this woman was sick. She had cancer. How do you know that she did not have cancer as the result of the Republicans?
I don't believe that that's the case. I don't have any facts to. I don't know essentially what causes cancer, but I don't. I know that there's all kinds of people that get it. You know.
Well, Phil, I want to call on your listeners to reach out to the Democratic organizations nationwide tonight and donate what you can so that we can prevent a senseless death like this. So that we can...
When you say senseless, though, this is the problem that I'm having. You know...
Well, what problem are you having with that?
Well, you know what a problem I'm having with it is you're saying that she would have lived had there not been something called Republicans.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I am not saying that at all.
You're not saying that that the woman... First of all, you said that she might have lived had there been Obama health care for her to access. Then you said she might have lived had she not been in this fight against Republicans. Is that what you're saying?
What I'm doing tonight, Phil, is I am not going to be argumentative. I don't want to have an argument with you.
Good. I don't want to have an argument.
I want to say that as Democrats, we have to look at Elizabeth Edwards as a casualty in a war. A war against taking America backwards. Taking America back to a time when we didn't take care of people, when we didn't take care of our sick and our elderly, when we didn't take care of our undernourished, when we didn't take care of our children. Let's not go back to those days. Let's move forward. Elizabeth Edwards stood for that. She's a casualty in that war, Phil.
And so again, you're saying that Elizabeth, all right, I mean,
What is your problem?
My problem is that you're turning her death into a political opportunity.
It is a political opportunity, Phil. It is a political opportunity to define her life, to define her death, and to strengthen the Democratic position in 2012. I don't understand.
You don't understand what's wrong with that.
If you're saying there is something wrong with pointing out the strength and the greatness of Elizabeth Edwards, I would...
No, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that.
I would say that you're wrong.
No, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm saying that there's something wrong with pointing out the strength and the greatness of Elizabeth Edwards, and at the same time say that her death was caused by this a visible and physical entity called Republicans.
I did not say that.
Yes, you did. You said that she's a martyr. She's a casualty in a war.
I said she is a casualty in a war against a particular kind of ignorance that doesn't want to help the sick, that doesn't want to help the young, that wants to fight wars overseas while our elderly are lying in the street. I didn't say Republican, and I didn't say Democrat.
Well, you're pretty much defining, though, the sides here. All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. We're talking here with Margaret Gray, who is a nationally syndicated columnist about the death of Elizabeth Edwards, what a sad passing it was. And I would say, just for me, that the passing represents, for me, it's a lot of things. It's a story about a tough, tough stretch of years for a person who was ill and who tried to put the best possible face she could on things, who was dealing with a lot, who was a lesson in tough, in strength, in courage. You wouldn't agree with that?
I absolutely would, Phil. Absolutely.
All right.
But do you think if Elizabeth Edwards was a Republican that the GOP wouldn't use some sort of a, I don't want to say, a Karl Rove type of scam?
So you're saying scam, you're saying this, you're saying that. You don't want to just address this honestly as the passing of a woman who is a Democrat, yes, who had a Democratic nominee for a husband, yes, but nonetheless it's just the story of strength. But you want to say she's a casualty.
I don't want to say it. I know that's what she is. I think what we need to do, and I understand, I think there's a lot of people listening right now, and if I could address those people directly, I know you're listening to Phil, and I know you're agreeing with a lot of what he's saying, and I don't blame you. But what I want you to consider is the following thing. We've got two more years before the next presidential election. We have got to strengthen the Democratic Party's hand. The way to do this is to raise money for our candidates, and the best way to raise that money now is to use this death. Excuse me for saying, but let's use this. This person who passed on, who is Elizabeth Edwards, yeah, I don't know, for all of a sudden I just spaced on a name. Elizabeth Edwards.
You forgot her name, huh?
No, I did not, Phil. I spaced momentarily, brain-headed. This woman, Elizabeth Edwards, this is a golden opportunity for us to strengthen the Democratic Party in the memory of the Edwards, of the Edwards woman, of Elizabeth Edwards. And I would strongly endorse and encourage and urge you to take that stand.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. We're talking to Margaret Gray here about the passing of Elizabeth Edwards. I was struck by this passing. I'm not a partisan guy when it comes to politics on either side. So it's not because I'm a Democrat. It's not anything other than I was just sort of struck by this because you watch this lady and you're like, wow, she's got cancer and her husband was cheating on her. And look at her. She's still hanging in. I was touched by that. We'll be back with Margaret Gray, who feels that the passing of Elizabeth Edwards is a golden opportunity for the Democratic Party to begin fundraising for 2012. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with more on the world-famous Phil Henry Show after this.
Phil Henry.
I also want to say that there are a number of...
Hendry.
877-876-PHIL, and welcome to this Tuesday night Phil Hendry show here from the El Pacifico. We have with us Margaret Gray, the nationally syndicated newspaper columnist. We're talking about the passing of Elizabeth Edwards. In March 2007, as we look back on the final years of Elizabeth Edwards' life, at the start of her husband's 2008 campaign, Elizabeth Edwards learned that the cancer had returned. We mentioned that it was in remission following the 2004 elections. It had returned and spread. Dr. Lisa Carey, the oncologist treating Mrs. Edwards, categorized the cancer as metastatic stage 4, largely confined to the bones. The cancer was diagnosed as treatable but not curable. Despite the diagnosis, Edwards said she was ready to go forward with her husband's bid for the White House. And we can catch up on some of these events, but and then there's the tawdry, sordid affair that he had.
Well, I don't think that we do anyone any service by bringing up the affair, because that was in and of itself a different aspect, I think, to the. You know that I am. I keep thinking of Kitty Dukakis, and
it's Elizabeth Edwards that we're talking about.
No, I know that. I know that. But I remember how tragic aspects of Kitty Dukakis' life were. Yes, Elizabeth Edwards. And so, Phil, let's look at the facts. You read some facts. Let's look at the facts. She was fine and healthy during the campaign, and the entire cheating scandal with alleged cheating scandal with John Edwards. Then the GOP had the long, drawn-out debate over health care, and then they won the most recent election, and this poor woman dies. I think we can see, really, where the problem was. It wasn't the cheating of John Edwards, and it wasn't the campaign. It was health care, and the horror, if you're a Democrat, the pure screaming horror of them winning these last elections.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. I'm sure we're going to get some comment on that. Kelly in Forest Grove, Oregon, listening to us on KXFD. Go ahead, Kelly. You're on with Margaret Gray.
Hi, Phil. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
Listen, I need to say a few things first. The first thing I want to tell you is that I have rarely called a radio station in my life. And I think the last time was probably 17 years ago, and that was for a radio contest to win tickets to Disney.
When you're a kid.
But well, I'm sitting here in my car, and I'm listening to this.
You're talking about a woman's age, Phil. Oh,
and I want to say, secondly, that I am not a Republican, nor am I a Democrat. I am an independent. And this is what I'm listening to this, and I am
outraged. Did you say nonsense? I thought I heard you say nonsense. Did you say nonsense?
This is nonsense.
Yes, she did say nonsense.
This is an opportunity.
My God.
To bring up that the battle that Elizabeth Edwards lost to was of cancer. You did, Ms. Gray did, specifically say that how do we know the Republicans did not cause her cancer? This is taking the opportunistic time of a woman's death
very,
and turning it into a political cause, and it is nonsense. Secondly, thirdly...
No, I didn't say that. I said that the Republicans, the battle of the health care debate...
Honestly, that can only be speculative at the very best. And it's actually another horrible way to turn this woman's death into an opportunistic cause politically. I've lost members of my family to cancer, and that is where the battle is. It is not with the Republican Party. And this is why I will never vote Democrat again, as long as the liberals and the progressives have control, because they talk out of both sides of their mouth when it fits them. Most politicians do that.
I think that's extreme. I think that's very extreme. I think you need to understand that the debate and the battle that Elizabeth Edwards was leading, she was a leading soldier in this war, and she fell. She fell in front of, if you will, the machine gun nest.
She fell to cancer. She fell to cancer.
Yes, absolutely fell to cancer. A cancer that might have been exacerbated by
We're not even going to, Margaret, we're not even going to, you are now going into areas, frankly, of medical fiction.
No, sir, I know she died of cancer. Okay.
You've been having a hard time even remembering her name.
Because this is a shocking event. All right.
But we're not going to speculate. Oh well, looking at John Boehner every morning caused the cancer to get worse. Kelly, thank you so much for your call. We're going to take some more phone calls. Our number, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, with Margaret Gray on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
I said that John Boehner was...
Phil Henry.
And she's ugly.
Listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back to the world famous Phil Henry Show. 877-876-PHIL. Margaret Gray on the line with us, who is a writer, a columnist, and admittedly a liberal. But Elizabeth Edwards' passing, Margaret, you are saying, is a great opportunity for the Democratic Party to begin fundraising. And you've also said that Elizabeth Edwards is a casualty of the GOP's machinations, the Republican Party's philosophies and wars. She's a casualty in a war, you say. And you've already heard from at least one listener who doesn't like that. And don't you think that's a bit tasteless? And don't you think that is exploiting the passing of Elizabeth Edwards?
No.
At this particular time?
No, I don't, Phil. And I don't think I'm exploiting anything. And I think I'm being very, very sensitive. I'm a woman. I understand what this is. This is a woman dying of breast cancer. This is a woman leaving children. Only a woman can understand that. And while the last caller I talked to was a female, I don't think she was being very honest when she said, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican. I think she was a Republican who was not being honest with me, because at the end, she sort of, her fangs came out.
All right, let's forget about that caller. Elizabeth Edwards, God rest her soul, has passed on, and if anything, it's a lesson in the continuing ravages of breast cancer. It's a lesson in courage that this woman would continue to fight on behalf of a husband that was not the best in the world. But certainly, we can't keep using this. You know.
Well, Phil, I'm not using it. I'm simply saying, look at Elizabeth Edwards. Yes, you're absolutely right. It's a lesson in courage. It's a lesson in breast cancer, all of those things, but we've had those lessons. I don't think breast cancer needs any more money. I think the courage angle we've seen a million different ways with a billion different people. Can't we do a little something for the Democratic Party and keeping focus on, I'm sorry, Phil, on Elizabeth Edwards? And
you forgetting her name, you know, isn't exactly...
Phil, this has been very traumatic.
No, you're forgetting this woman's name in every single break. You're wanting to say Kitty Dukakis. I think at one point you wanted to say Betty Ford. Her name is Elizabeth Edwards, so people are going to ask this question. Just exactly how focused are you on Elizabeth Edwards, and how focused are you on just this message of...
Phil, it is a golden opportunity for a Democratic Party that has done its level best to lose every election and to lose every bit of sentiment from the American people. I've never seen a political party even worse than the Republicans in the last presidential election. I've never seen a party like the Democratic Party lose so much so quickly. We've got to use this. I'm not saying in a callous way. But I am saying, if there is a way we can get pictures, oh God, you're really going to. I have to ask you something, Phil. Here,
you know, you're just sort of, if you forgive me, you're giving a speech here.
I want to ask you if you will hold your temper, because there's something I need to ask, and I know you're going to lose your temper, and I'm going to ask you ahead of time if you would please not lose your temper. If you would please, as a favor to me.
Well, I don't know that I can guarantee that.
As a favor to me and in memory of this wonderful woman.
All right.
Okay. Is there a way we can get photographs of this poor woman as she was dying? Because we can...
See that, you know...
You said you weren't going to get angry.
Boy, that's as low as it gets. You know?
How dare you? I have worked on behalf of the Democratic Party my entire life.
That is as low as it gets. No. No, there isn't. If I know of someone that has those pictures that wants to give them to you, I will go to that person's house and steal them from him. If I know that you have them, I will pay someone to break into your house to get them. Is that clear enough?
If I thought you were serious, Phil, I would call the police.
Margaret, you know something? What you've come on this program talking about tonight is to use the death of Elizabeth Edwards in a million different ways to help the Democratic Party, to re-solidify the Democratic Party. Can we get pictures of this poor woman in the last day of her death? And you have no concept of the hurt that that could cause, not just her family, millions of people that admire her.
I absolutely do have that concept, but I'm saying there are some things more important than our egos. Do I want to have photographs of myself plastered all over the country with no hair on my head, ravaged from chemotherapy? No, I would not. But it isn't me I'm asking about. I am asking about this woman, the Edwards wife, the Elizabeth Edwards.
And the Elizabeth Edwards.
Phil, you've taken something beautiful and you have spit on it tonight. You really have.
No, I have not. I've asked very good questions. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Cynthia in Brooksville, Florida. You're on the Phil Henry Show. Cynthia, go ahead, please.
Hi, Phil.
Yes, ma'am.
It shows me great concern about the true feelings of Margaret regarding this lady. You know, politics, she was involved in her lifetime when she was healthy.
Yeah.
But at the time of her illness, politics didn't amount to a pee hole in the snow. This lady had lost a son a few years back.
She suffered, and
there is nothing that you can do but to support them, to love them.
Absolutely.
And at this time, she went through a terrible ordeal with her husband.
Yes.
And they need emotional support.
I don't disagree with any of that.
Politics. Politics has nothing to do with a person's illness. Her illness went from her breath through her bones.
The illness of the person can be used.
Cancer of the liver is uncurable.
Liver? It was breast cancer. Hello? Good Lord.
It also
metastasized to the liver, yes.
It was breast
cancer. Not radiation. Nothing can a doctor do. It's very
sad. I understand that. I think we got that message because she's dead now.
And I watched these people die and suffer.
Well, did you do anything for them?
She was a very
brave soul. What did you do for them?
What does that mean?
She's talking about watching people die. Did she do anything for them?
She was working in hospice care. And the fact of the matter remains, Margaret, that you want to use the image of Elizabeth Edwards as a dying woman to raise money for the Democratic Party.
What? You know, after Ronald Reagan died, what did I get? Coffee mugs, T-shirts, calendars. Anybody want to comment on that? Yeah.
You didn't get them right away, not the next day. There weren't pictures of Ronald Reagan laying in his deathbed either. Thank you very much, Cynthia. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Wes in Lexington, Kentucky. Go ahead, Wes. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Margaret Gray.
Hey, thanks, Phil.
Yes, sir.
Miss Gray is just showing her self-righteous indignation. Very shallow person. Doesn't really care, obviously.
I don't know if you're in politics. Do you know anything about politics? Because politics is the art of the possible.
You're just a good little socialist. You're a good little socialist.
No, because I said I'm a Democrat? Is that it? So you see how you're using politics now to make your point. You're using the death of a woman to make your point. No, I didn't say socialist.
I'm just going on what you said. My mother actually passed away from cancer. And you're using socialism to promote your point of view and understand laws. You don't have to
be a
woman
to understand
laws.
Then why did you bring up a political point of view, even as you talk about the death of your mother? That, to me, is wrong.
Well, you're using it for... I'm sorry, I'm talking too much.
You know what, Phil? Yes, you are. You're not allowing me to make my point. And my point is this.
I've listened to your point. You've been making your point. I've listened to the whole show. You're selling somebody else, and it's also easy for you to do that. It's also easy for you to say that, well, we should just use pictures of her on her deathbed in order to raise money for the Democrats. If the Democratic Party was doing so well, then why did they lose so badly? I think it shows
exactly where they lost so badly. I'll tell you why they lost so badly. Because the great leaders that we have, the Elizabeth Edwards of the world, were run into the ground by the Democrats, by the Republicans. They were beaten into the ground by the tactics.
You have lost your mind.
I have not. I am telling you that the people like Elizabeth Edwards, who went out there on behalf of Democrats, were ravaged worse by the Republicans than by cancer.
Oh, come on. And then you want to use the picture of the woman.
I said, does anyone have one? I didn't tell you what I was going to do with it. I'll bet you some money here. I got some money, though, that says that if I were able to use that picture, Wes would run down to the corner to get a copy of the newspaper was in the next day.
All right. Wes, thank you for your call. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Alan in High Point, North Carolina. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to comment. I've been listening to the show, and honestly, as a Democrat myself, it just disgusts me that this lady would disrespect Elizabeth.
Will you let people talk, please? You think because this guy disagrees with you, he's a fake Democrat?
I have been a registered Democrat. I have voted
dollars
Democrat, and I fully support the Democratic Party. But this just disgusts me that this lady would just. It's almost a humiliation to Elizabeth. I don't understand where this lady can get across as far as trying to use her, you know, politically. Have some respect for her and her family in the past.
I love her very much. I think she's a great woman.
That doesn't look like it. It absolutely does not look like it. If it was my own wife or something, I would be wanting to smack you upside the head. Have some respect for not only yourself,
so
but
this
lady and her passing.
So you'd beat a woman, would you? Okay. Thank you.
It sounds like that's what you need.
You'd strike a woman.
Because you absolutely...
Okay, Margaret, don't play the martyr.
No, I'm shocked. What I was trying to say tonight was that the Democratic Party needs all the help it can get. And all of a sudden, a great idea where we could... I don't know what we could do, keychains or photos, something. All of a sudden, I'm attacked, and abuse of a woman is counseled by this man. I feel as if I'm Elizabeth Edwards tonight, Phil. She died of breast cancer. I would die from a savage beating at the hands of this man, Alan. What's the difference?
Do you honestly believe that anything to do with the health care? This lady was no doubt wealthy. This lady was wealthy. She had all the best means. She had the doctor. She had better than the health care could have provided for her.
Perhaps, maybe. I don't know. I don't know how much John was spending. How much was John spending on this?
My father didn't die because of a political affiliation or something that, you know, he had cancer. He died. My brother died of cancer. It just frustrates me that someone that of your understanding just can't accept the fact that people die of cancer.
Yes, but you're telling me that your father and brother died of breast cancer. That's got to be a rarity.
My sister had breast cancer. My father died of cancer. My brother died of cancer.
You said your brother and your father had breast cancer, and your sister died of
cancer. I didn't say they had breast cancer. I said they had cancer.
No. What do you mean his sister died of testicular cancer?
I thought that's what I heard the man say. So you see what I'm saying? I can't do anything right. I can't make a right move. And when I say something that I hope will help, I'm told that I'm going to be beaten to death right after he shovels something about his father dying from breast cancer.
He didn't say that. And I thank you very much, Alan, for your call. Yeah, one more. Go ahead, sir.
Your own personal agenda.
All right.
My own personal agenda is the Democratic... forget it.
Oh, forget it, huh?
Yeah, because you know what? This, I could see the cards are stacked against me right from the beginning. All I said was if we could get a photograph of Elizabeth in the last 24 hours, yes. If we put them on a keychain, it would be a memento.
A keychain photograph.
I hope both of you men go to hell for the spousal abuse I'm sure both of you have participated in.
Did she hang up?
Yes.
Okay, well, she hung up on us, Alan. I thank you for your call, though, sir. 877-876-PHIL. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Yes?
You heard what I said, didn't you?
I'm not involved in spousal abuse.
What are you calling me?
Okay, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
And the way that I've been treated
Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show here. Margaret Gray with us. Ms. Gray, and if you missed the last hour, I don't believe that we've treated you disrespectfully. I think you've taken the passing of Elizabeth Edwards, and you've done something that people didn't appreciate. You have said that Elizabeth Edwards' passing can be used as an opportunity, you know, by the Democratic Party.
Phil, I know what I said, and I did not in any way say that let's use this the Edwards.
You know, and that's something else. You keep forgetting who she is. You know,
I'm not forgetting who she is. I have drawn a blank on a name. I know who she is. I'm saying that there is something much more important to talk about, and that is this great woman died. Why? She was a soldier in the fight against the reactionary politics of the Republicans, which have taken us back decades in this country. And I am being called inappropriate, and I have been vilified in every way. You know, Phil, I'm a female. I could have had breast cancer, too. I could have had a hysterectomy.
Did you?
That's not the point. I'm a female. If I say to you that I had a hysterectomy, I lost my uterus. How dare you say that I am... I'm using the death of another woman for commercial purposes.
Did you go through that?
That's not the point. If you believe that I did have a hysterectomy, then I'm making my point.
Did you have one or did you not?
I'm not going to answer that. I won't dignify that with an answer. I think you should know the answer.
All right, then the answer is no. Let's go to another phone call.
No, excuse me. Then you're a Nazi.
Yeah, let's go to another phone call. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Anne in New York City on the Phil Henry. Let me get over to Anne here. Hi, Anne. You're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Phil. Listen, you have to have a little more control of your guests. They don't let the people talk.
Oh, this is the now, same way. This is America. This is not Weimar Germany. And in this country, what we do is we debate issues. And we debate the issues in ways that are far more interesting than you are capable of. And I won't talk to her.
Why won't you talk to her?
Because she is right about one thing. You do need to have more control over your phone calls, like the chronics.
Well, I don't remember that lady calling.
Yeah, she called the other night, and it was Bobby 1 minute, now Margaret the next. And if I hear that woman's voice again, Phil, then I'm going to get pictures of you on your deathbed. And how will I know when your deathbed will be and how it will occur and three guesses?
Oh, shut up. Margaret Gray on the Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Elizabeth Edwards has passed on from cancer. You know what? I don't want to hear from her for a long time. As we mentioned, Elizabeth Edwards passed on from cancer early this morning. She was 61 years of age. It was breast cancer initially, and then it metastasized to the liver, and then it had metastasized earlier to the bones and then to the liver, and obviously was a very, very... It was a very brutal thing to experience. Coming up next hour, we're going to be talking with Raj Faneen about the proposition to increase pay for our soldiers. That is, give our soldiers pay raises. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. I want to tell you about our website, philhendryshow.com. Coming up this week, we'll be opening up our merchandise store. We'll be selling our classic Best Of CDs from 97 on. So I suggest that you get over there, get yourself a backstage pass, too, so you can watch our live streaming video of the show and listen to live streaming audio of the show as well. We have our archives, which extend to thousands and thousands of hours of recorded material. And we also, of course, have our podcasts, and we have our classic Phil podcast. So check the stuff out there at philhendryshow.com. There's also some animated features that we've done, our TV pilots. It's all there, and it's the only place to go to get actual archived material of the Phil Hendry Show, high quality archived material of the Phil Hendry Show that goes back to the very beginning of our national show, at least. It's philhendryshow.com, a backstage pass. All right, so next hour it's Raj Fanin as we talk to Raj about pay for our soldiers and possible pay raises. 877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
What they should do is establish what is the guideline.
Compromise is advice, and I have no problem. I mean, we often have to do that.
I'm not angry. I am frustrated. This is my son.
You know, this is a bigger picture. You look around the country, you see the atheist billboard.
When you're really ready to play, play for Nevada.
She's a bra.
She's going to hell this bitch.
Famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Where truth is our bitch. And I do mean it's a bitch some nights, man. And through the looking glass we go every night, going places other talk shows cannot go. Some nights they wouldn't want to go where we go. Coming up this hour, service members are getting a raise, but it's their smallest increase since 1962, a 1.4% increase. Joining us to discuss this, Raj Fanin, who is the CFO of the family business, an aviation insulation business. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, and our website, philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com, and we hope that you'll join us over there for our live streaming video as well as audio of the show. I thought that I had brought up the story, but here it is, essentially. Smallest increase in almost 50 years, dubbed absolute garbage. But Senate filibuster over Don't Ask, Don't Tell jeopardizes any raise at all. When President Obama announced a freeze on pay for federal workers, he did exempt the military from the deficit-fighting measure. Service members are scheduled to receive a 1.4% salary hike in 2011. But that raise would be their smallest annual raise since 1962. So it's obviously reflecting a very, very tough time the country's having, and I guess it's a very, very tough time the country's having figuring out exactly, you know, how they want to save money. Stars and Stripes, which is an independent news source for members of the military, reports today that with Republicans in the Senate holding up consideration of the annual National Defense Authorization Bill, which includes a repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, even that 1.4% increase is now in jeopardy. But a pay hike isn't the only measure in the bill that would affect service members' wallets. Also included in the legislation are recruiting and enlistment bonuses, an extension of TRICARE coverage for dependents of troops until they're 26, increases in hostile fire and imminent danger pay, and aid to schools with high enrollment of children from military families. 877-876-PHIL, the number, and let's get on the line here. Mr. Raj Fanin, who is the chief financial officer of Dynamic, which is a aviation insulation business. And you guys are involved in the, you know, just like anybody else, any other business, you're involved in budgeting. And you being the chief financial officer, Mr. Fineen, you're the one that is looking at the bottom line. What do you think about this? What do you think of the, first of all, the proposal to freeze all federal pay except the military, which it sounds fair to me, but the fact that it's such a small increase?
First of all, I want to thank you for allowing us this opportunity to speak on behalf of our company and speak to American people, you know, about this economic matter, because I have been a part of the economy of this country for 4 years and have been a beneficiary of good business. But you must be a good business. And you asked me this question, you know, does the military deserve this increase?
Well, not so much do they deserve. I suppose you could address that if you want. I'm thinking more in terms of what do you think I think I did ask you that. But what do you think of the fact that it could be held up?
Well, I don't necessarily think that this pay increase for now, you know, is a good idea, because look at the state of the American economy, the fact that there is this federal freeze that you speak of, and also for the military pay increase. Let's look at this. If you want to look at this with logic, you know, that these American soldiers, if you look at other American soldiers, they were to go into combat and to win, you know, this battle. This American soldier has not yet won this battle. My son, a boy, you know, he's 9 years old, but he said to me, Daddy, don't you think for them to get this raise, they should at least win, you know, one more to get this raise?
Your son said for them to get the raise, they ought to win at least one war?
Yes. And, you know, it's a child is going to ask this question, but this is not a bad question, you know.
Well, I don't know that they... I'm not sure that they actually look at pay raises for our military based on the wars that they win.
Yes, but that is very well true, I'm sure. But I am asking you, I ask the people listening to us tonight, shouldn't that be to take this into consideration? If your military is asked to have a pay raise, could they not first show what they have done? You know, if I give a pay raise to the people that work on the assembly line for us, for instance, or to my office or to my sales staff, this must be based upon performance. If I give a pay raise as American president, you know, to a military, have they earned this? And the answer to that question is not yet, you know. I'm not to say they have not done a good job.
Well, they've done a great job. I mean, they've, in my opinion, they've done a great job, you know, in Afghanistan and Iraq.
But you also must understand that the Iraq war was a war that not everyone felt was the right war. So they went and they waged war in a country that not everyone wanted them to be in. So you can't give them a raise for this because there are going to be people that disagree that they get a raise for this. It's the wrong war, you know.
Well, you can't penalize them. They go where they're supposed to go. You know, I'm glad they went to Iraq. I agreed with the Iraq war.
Yes, but there are lots of people...
I'm assuming that you didn't.
No, I did not. I did not agree. But if I did agree and they won the war, then I say give them a raise. But not only did they not win the war in Iraq.
Well, I think they did. I think it's very clear they did. I think they were winning it anyway. I think they were removed from the theater in Iraq there because of political consideration. But you're basically saying they didn't win the war in Iraq, and so therefore they shouldn't get a raise.
Well, not only did they not win the war in Iraq, they should not really have been there. But I know, I agree with you to say I don't want to punish these men. I don't want to punish them. Because they go, as you said, Phil, they go where they're told to go. But still, you know, it's like to say, did you go to Iraq? Yes, I did. You were ordered to go to Iraq. Yes, I was. Well, I know that you followed your order, but that's, you don't use the American term, they say, that's tough, you know, tough toenails. You know, you went through the wrong war, my friend, so you don't get a raise.
And what about a raise based on Afghanistan?
In Afghanistan, they do a good job, but they have not won yet, you see. You see, I don't know. We give them a raise after Abu Ghraib, for instance, after so many civilians. We give them a raise for invading a country that didn't attack us. A normal employee gets a bonus or a pay raise after they close a big deal or complete a big project. But so why the difference here, you know?
Well, Abu Ghraib, I mean, there was a handful of guys, and it was underwear on the head.
It was not that good. It wasn't good, you know. And then you say Afghanistan. Now, I said to you, Afghanistan is a good idea, you know, but that job's not done yet.
All right, hold on, Roger. Number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, talking to the CFO of Dynamic, which is an aviation insulation company. Mr. Fineen is the chief financial officer of that company. So we talk about pay raises for the military and the idea that Mr. Fineen at least believes they're not entitled to these pay raises just yet because they haven't won a war yet. The last pay raise the American military got was in the early 1960s. Excuse me, I shouldn't say the last pay raise, but the smallest increase they've gotten, 1.4%, the smallest before this one was in 1962. So are you saying the soldiers of 1962 were similar to the soldiers of today?
Well, I mean, if you look at 1962, there was no war that we were yet to fight. In Vietnam, there has not been an escalation in Vietnam. And so the last war that we fought was Korea, which was also, you know, was that a win? I don't know, you know. So by 1962, there was no real war that anybody could look at and say, what was our last big win, you know? So naturally, there's going to be a low pay, what do you want to say, raise, you know. Vietnam, I don't know if they got a raise. The last war that America fought where they should have given them a big raise was this, the Gulf War that, of course, was Saddam Hussein, you know, in Kuwait. And they should have given them a bonus.
Because they won that war.
Well, yes, and Panama. You know, and Grenada, but not this. You know, they haven't.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, speaking with Raj Fineen about the pay raise for the military. Marine Corps Sergeant John Ellis told USA Today, this is absolute garbage. The U.S. government can bail out GM and other major corporations, but for us little guys who make beans for money and risk getting killed, these people think we don't need a raise. What do you think of that?
I don't have a lot of sympathy for the point of view, you know, to give money for GM. I understand the man being upset, you know. I understand. But if you look at the economics, you have to say GM and these other companies must get more money than soldiers because the soldier, you know, he's not, you're not going to give a soldier any money that he's going to say to you, oh, thank you so much. I give you a raise. He's going to say, look, he's getting 1.4. He says that, you know, I pull it out. I wave my thing at that, you know. So it doesn't matter what you give to the soldier. He's still going to say that General Motors is pigs, you know, they're pigs. They're nothing but pigs. And I agree. General Motors, Ford Motor, the other one, you know?
With the banks?
Yes, the banks. they're all pig, they're filthy pig. But having said that, the soldier, they don't have any money to give him.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, talking with Raj Fanin about soldiers, and do they deserve raises? Well, in point of fact, what's the last war they've won? The last guys who deserved a raise were the Gulf War guys and the Panama guys and the Grenada guys, but the guys in Iraq and Afghanistan haven't won anything yet. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back at the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back, 877-876-PHIL. Mr. Raj Fanin from San Fernando Valley, we're talking about the military and the possibility of pay raises. Now, this is a pay raise, Raj, that's been approved, 1.4%. Okay.
So I know that this raise has been approved, but there are people who say that it's not enough, you know.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of people that say it's not enough. And as I said to you, it's the smallest one since 1962. But are you saying that they don't deserve one at all?
Well, I, if you ask me, and I run a business now for 24 years. If you ask me, I am telling you that for me, you don't give a raise, and I don't know there's a business that's different. You don't give a raise unless you get this result and this raise for these soldiers, this time they get the free housing, they get their clothes, they get rent free, they get food, but there's no result, you know. You don't get the raise just because you show up, you know. Is the military even working for the money? Are they defending the country? You know, well. But do we want them to be part of entitlement, you know?
All right, 877-876-PHIL, entitlement, so that's what you think it is, huh?
It looks like it's entitlement, and you know that in order to, for this economy to get back, you know, it's got to get rid of entitlement.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, let me go over to a phone call here. James in Napa, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. James, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that your cast doesn't seem to really understand the fact that Congress is the one who's been running the majority of our wars, except for, Desert Storm, which was ran by Schwarzkopf, and that was very successful. But Vietnam and all this nonsense over in Iraq and Afghanistan has been run by Congress and the political machine.
Well,
so
I don't know.
We have any success. And, So if you
if you got that bad boss, if you got the bad boss, it's tough. You know?
I'm on my telephone and I'm paying money to talk to you, so just zip it. All right?
It's tough. It's real tough, you know, if you got a bad boss.
I'm a soldier. I'm an ex-soldier, and I have a right to speak. This is America.
It's tough. It's tough.
Quiet,
you know?
We know it's tough. Let the man talk.
But it's tough.
I know it's tough. I know it's tough.
Look, now here's the thing. If you want
his best citizen, Congress, you know.
Somebody shouldn't get a raise. It's Congress who should not get a raise. Because not only do they not know how to run a war, they don't know how to run the country. Because the military
they're not supposed to run the country.
Because they put their lives on the lives on the lives on their they put their lives on the line for our freedom. 1% is a joke. It should be at least 3 or 4%. It ought to be better than whatever inflation is. The other thing...
They're not even running the country. The American people run the country. So if you want to...
You don't pay the military...
Lodge a complaint, you know. You lodge a complaint, you know.
It's ridiculous.
You got to lodge a complaint, you know.
It's not a company.
You know what I'm saying?
These people put their lives on the line. It's not a company. You've got a complete misunderstanding of how this country works. What the military is about, how it's ran,
and you do?
You don't know what you're talking about. Anyway,
you do.
I'll listen to you on the radio.
Okay, please do, because you've got a lot to learn. Number one, if you get these bastards, I understand what he says to these bastards in Congress, you know. And
could you not use the word bastard, if you don't mind?
No, but I'm saying the bastard in Congress.
All right, the bastards in Congress, and that may well be something that people agree with calling them, but I would like you to, you know, just a little bit, you know, watch your language, if it's okay. You know.
All right.
Tell you what, let me take one more phone call, and we'll... 877-876-PHIL. Jim, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Okay. Mr. Finine, what is your country of origin?
My country of origin?
Yes. Where did you immigrate from?
Immigrate from? From Egypt.
From where?
From Egypt. Egypt.
Well, let me tell you something.
What difference does it make?
I served 23 years in the infantry. Okay.
And these guys in Washington.
All right, let the man talk.
I spent 23 years in the infantry. I'm retired military, retired at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. I spent two tours of duty in Korea at the 2nd Infantry Division on the DMZ. I spent 8 years in 7th Infantry Division.
Great. Get to the point, will you?
Don't rush the guy.
Give me his resume. You shut your pie hole, my friend. I tell you this.
You got to win a war if you're going to make money.
You do more talking than you do fighting. You know that? You've done more talking than I hear you do soldiering.
It's people like you who are not working for this country.
You have to go and win a war before you can pay.
That's not how it works.
This guy also doesn't like the fact that I come from Egypt. Muslims do you have in the army? I think you've got quite a few, you know? And so this Jack Paul and these bastards in Washington.
All right. Now, I haven't heard a thing anybody has said.
Well, that's not my fault. This guy says, hey, let me tell you something, and he's giving me a resume that goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. I'm telling you, if you want to have a raise, you've got to have a result.
Rambling, okay?
I was in the first infantry, and then I went to Fort Knox, and then I went here, and then I went there. Chief Financial Officer. That means I know about money. Chief Financial Officer. And I'm trying to educate you.
All right. Well, you know what? We're up against our break now, so I apologize very much, Jim, but we got to take a break. And Mr. Finine, I'd appreciate it very much if you'd shut up. 877-876-PHIL. Do we give raises to our soldiers? Well, they want a raise. Mr. Finine says that you got to win a war before you earn a raise. They're getting one of the smallest raises ever. They would like a bigger raise. And Raj Finine's saying, what wars have they won? 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Raj Finine on the line with us. Now, here's the story, and just so we're clear, the stopgap bill, and this is one that would freeze the pay of federal workers except the military, the raise is 1.4%. That's the smallest raise since 1962.
Yes, I understand. But if you want to be, look, you know, I've listened to the people who call the show. They are not very intelligent because they say, where are you from? You are Egyptian. You've got these people who are going to want to argue with me because I am from Egypt. I'm not anti-American. I am pro-American. But I am looking at this strictly from a CFO point of view. And if you want a raise, you must end the raise. And the way you end the raise is you go and, you know, let me put this the way I say to my people. You got to go out and kick some ass, you know. You have to go out to kick some ass.
Well, they're kicking ass.
They're kicking ass, but the job's not done, you know.
Well, but like the man said, the guy that you didn't like, the guy who said, you know, where are you from, Egypt? He said, this is different from a company where, you know, you're meeting a number every month. Hey, you killed this many, you get a raise. It's not how that works. Not did you win the war. It's that these guys, it's a cost of living raise, you know.
Well, this 1.4% salary hike, and they don't even like this raise. I would say to, the soldier to say, I'm not going to give you a raise. You don't like a 1.4% salary raise. I'm not going to give to you. And I give you a raise when you win war. That's going to be incentive to win war, you know.
Well, like the man said, the war's not being fought by the soldiers. It's being fought by a Congress that is battling with not only this president but the last president over funding and the length of the stay and how long they're going to fight and where they're going to fight.
Well, you know, it's tough all the way around. You know, life's a bitch. You know, life's a bitch, and then you die. You know this?
Yes, I've heard that. Yes, I have. 877-876-PHIL. Mr. Raj Fadin with us. He's the CFO of his company out in the Valley. The military is getting a raise, and he doesn't think they deserve it. You got to win a war before you get your raise. Here is Shane in San Antonio. Shane, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Raj Fadin.
Hey, man. I just got a couple of comments real quick. I'm not going to debate with anybody. I don't know who this dude is, but I was in the service for 5.5 years. I've been over 3 times, and I've done my share and done stuff that would curdle normal human being stomachs. Alright,
well, you know what you could do is sell it to Hollywood.
Man, I'm not worried about Hollywood. I'm just letting you know those guys deserve every cent they get.
You could sell those.
That's all I got.
Hollywood.
Alright, is that what? I don't even know what he said.
Neither do I.
Anyway, thank you. 877-876-PHIL. He said that he's done things that would curdle your blood, I think.
Okay, well, if that's the case, if he's done things that would curdle my blood, he should write those down and send those to Hollywood. But I don't think he is a real soldier.
And who wasn't?
That last guy.
The guy Shane?
No, he's not a real soldier. He's not. I could tell because he was embarrassed to stay on the phone with me, and he wanted to make a statement.
Well, whether he was a real soldier or not, okay, here is a real soldier talking. I mentioned this Marine Sergeant John Ellis. The U.S. government can bail out GM and other major corporations.
I agree. It's not. I don't think they should bail out GM. I don't think they should bail out these other major corporations. But they did, you know. And I agree 100%. But the fact of the matter is they did. So do you want to go and get the money back, or do you want to start to do what is a smart thing to do? And the smart thing to do now is not to give a raise to the soldier until they win the war. And that's called incentive. You see, the Obama, he wanted to have a 1.4 or 1.9. It's still the smartest raise these guys have ever had, you know. So I, for my money, I think what Obama should do is not give them a raise at all. So the 1.4 looks like the biggest amount of money they've ever had in their life. That's what I would do, because I tell my people, if you want money, go out and kick some ass!
All right, well, we don't need you yelling or anything.
But that's what I say. You need, you know, that's what people need. They need to have their asses kicked. These bastards in the United States Congress need to have their ass kicked. These bastards in the Congress, and then these bastards that they have who run the military, and the bastards that they have running all the CBO, kick their ass. My company has made money every year, four straight years we make money. We kick ass. You know why? Because my people go out and they sell. If they don't get no raise.
Well,
simple as that. And if we have a down year, and God forbid we have a down year, even in recession we're making money. If that happens, nobody gets no raise. They can kiss my hind end.
Well, what are you yelling for?
I'm yelling because of these people you have call your program. You do better to turn off the radio station. Dumbass to call. I'd be better to talk to nobody. I'd like to talk to Francis the Mule.
Well, I mean, they have opinions.
Yeah, they've got opinion. Good, you know. They've got opinion. And I tell you that the only way America will find its way out of this hole is they've got to go over there and kick some ass. Then they come back, they get their AIDS.
All right, well, thank you for that perspective.
Yeah, well, you need some perspective. Let me tell you, my friend.
All right, Raj Fanin, ladies and gentlemen, 877-876-PHIL. Our news hour coming up next hour. Okay, so you guys now, you got it? You got to go over and kick some ass. Then you get a raise. That's the way they do it at Raj's company. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Telling you, man, what a season, huh? Coming up our news hour next hour. Well, if it was up to me, they'd get a raise. I don't know. You know, if it was up to me, I'd just send out. I'd go out and I'd start robbing people. Yes, I would. I would authorize the IRS to rob primarily those people that had taken all of that TARP money to begin with. Just go to their houses and steal some of it back. I think that'd be great. I was in the bank today, and I was getting a cashier's check. And I was standing there at a window being helped by very nice people. Don't get me wrong, you know. But there were only about five of them, and they have windows at the bank for how many people would you say?
I don't know, probably about like 10.
Yeah, maybe 10. And the girls were saying, and when I say girls, they were young women, and they were saying, we're very, very sorry for the wait, and I appreciate all of that. But the line was a long line, and they had five people. Of course, what am I thinking? Why don't you hire more people for the season? I know you have the money. I know you have nothing but money. I know you're swimming in money. I know you're drowning in money. Well, we don't know. You don't know what? We don't know how big a hole this toxic asset thing is and how much... You don't know. You know what? You don't even know what color toilet paper you ought to buy tomorrow. What do you mean you don't know? That question is well beyond you. What you ought to be doing is the following thing. You know how many a lot of zeros makes, so you got all of that from the Federals. Put some people on and start helping your customers, and you worry about all that toxic asset stuff. Give that to somebody else to worry about. How about like a federal overseer? Or, I don't know, how about the jailer? How about a new CEO? How about, but you cats there at the branch manager level and you people that are in charge of hiring and firing, you're not going to worry about any of that. You're going to put some people on and help your people here during Christmas time and get some people employed and, you know, make the lines a little less than 6 miles long there at the bank like it was today with five people and the rest of them out to lunch or whatever the hell they were doing.
How do you know they're at lunch? Maybe they didn't have nobody.
I think they were at lunch because they kept drifting back, but then others kept drifting out, you know. Don't give me this horse dung about how you need this, that, or something else, and we didn't want to take the money, but they made us take the money. You know, this is an area that no one in the history of the human race, at least in the history of Western civilization, has ever been in before. It's called, we don't know how deep the hole is that we dug. So if we're giving money over here and we're not giving money to that bank, the perception is that one bank is weaker than the other, in which case the stock market, already reeling, it may have less confidence in certain institutions than others, and what we're trying to do is prop up this entire banking industry. We're trying not to have banks fail. Now, it might be stupid, and there's a lot of people, unfamiliar as they may be, with the history of this country and the economies that we've lived through, will say, well, let them fail and let the entire auto industry fail. That's fine. I'm not going to debate that with you. You can, if you'd like to see the auto industry fail, great, fine, whatever you want to do. But the fact of the matter is, it's a tough economy. It could be a lot tougher. Maybe we could make it less tough by, you know, some of the steps that were taken, not just by Obama, but by Bush. Well, here we are. And this is a bad time. And there's a lot of, and now they're saying that this unemployment will not, we won't get back to normal unemployment numbers for 5 years. Well, that's a recession. That's a depression in other decades, in other centuries. That would be people dead in the streets. That would be people dying from starvation. That doesn't happen anymore. Why? Because we now have governments that step in and do things. You know, but when a bank takes $20 billion in TARP money, $20 billion in TARP money, very happily takes $20 billion in TARP money, and they're standing there with their thumb parked up their rear end while they got people going out the door trying to get help, I say that there's a problem with management. I say there's a problem with allocating assets, you know? Anyway, I didn't want to get on that.
Yeah, you come back from the bank all pissed off.
I did?
Yeah.
All I did, I just went over there to get a cashier's check. I didn't mean to be pissed off. I know that I was in a hurry. Maybe that was it. Anyway, in other news, Representative Joe Barton pushed back on Monday against a contention by a Democratic FCC commissioner that the government should create new regulations to promote diversity in news programming. Barton was reacting to a proposal made last week by FCC Commissioner Michael Copps, who in a speech suggested that broadcasters be subject to a new public values test every 4 years. I hope that you do not mean to suggest that it is the job of the federal government through the FCC to determine the content is available for Americans to consume. Copps had suggested the test would make a broadcaster's license renewal contingent upon proof that they met a prospective set of federal criteria. He said outlets should be mandated to do the following: prove they have made a meaningful commitment to public affairs and news programming, prove they are committed to diversity programming, for instance, by showing that they depict women and minorities. By showing that they depict women and minorities. What does that mean? Report more to the government about which shows they plan to air. Require greater disclosure about who funds political ads. And devote 25% of their primetime coverage to local news. The regulations would apply to all news outlets operating on the... Well, that's not going to happen, Commissioner Copps. You know that, and I know that. That isn't going to happen. You know, you guys in the FCC, you're another one. I don't know why you even exist. There's no known reason in the universe why the Federal Communications Commission exists. I mean, as it does. There was a time back in the early 30s when you guys existed so that you could regulate frequencies and you could regulate operating power so that people weren't stepping on each other, so that we, you know, signals weren't clashing, so that, you know, if a guy's broadcasting on a clear channel, that it is a clear channel, and there isn't anybody getting mowed down by the guy's signal. In other words, you served a technical purpose that is and was needed. But when it comes to programming, there, you know...
Well, why don't you talk about it?
What do you mean, why don't I talk about it?
Yeah, it's really interesting.
I'm not going to sit here and get wound up again about something else. God, I just got flipped out, man, over the bank, you know, the bank taking $20 billion in TARP. Now you want me to flip out on the FCC?
Yeah, but I mean, these are things what need to be said.
Oh, get out of here.
They do, man. You talk about the FCC. Every time you talk about them, man, you make sense.
I'm getting tired of being pissed off about everything, you know?
Well, it's time to be pissed off.
It's time to be pissed off, huh? I'm getting tired of being pissed at every time I turn around, there's something that's wacky. The FCC. Speaking of that, Bristol Palin's success triggered FCC complaints. Proof positive that we've got more brain dead in this country. You know, when they say the American people are angry, they're right. But the American people are not all angry at the same thing. That's what people are missing. We've got a whole section of people that are pissed off at the color blue, but we've got a whole section of people that are pissed off at the color red. Now, you can say the American people are angry. Yes, they are, but they're angry about different stuff. Bristol Palin wins Dancing with the Stars because the people voted for her, because there's a certain, I don't know, some people like her, right? Now here we have her triggering FCC complaints. In the days after Bristol Palin was voted into the finals of Dancing with the Stars, viewers from across the country wrote to the Federal Communications Commission, accusing ABC of everything from running a payola-type program to encouraging and promoting teen pregnancy. Many of the complainants, whose letters were obtained through a Freedom of Information Act, were upset that, as one Oregonian put it, the top scores were voted off, yet Sarah Palin's daughter remained on. It's got nothing to do with the FCC, lady. Why do I know that was a woman, you know?
Yeah, you shouldn't, because that one guy shot his TV set.
True. One viewer from Pittsburgh alleged that the show's voting system had been fixed by extreme supporters of the Tea Party and the radical right wing. I find that it's become a political platform for Sarah Palin to improve her image and ooze her political slime. The aggrieved correspondent continued, Bristol is not a star. What did she do? She had sex and got pregnant. Let's reward her. I made several calls to ABC's complaint line because I'm that stupid and I have that little of a life. And I hope that their phone lines melt. It's become a political movement with Tea Party websites instructing on how to vote for Palin. Hi, I am so paranoid that I've created an entire reality that I'm now going to relate to you. Here is my reality. Ready? Tea Party websites instruct on how to vote for Bristol Palin on Dancing with the Stars. Yes, that's right. Also, I'm so weird that I believe that Sarah Palin uses her daughter to improve her image and ooze her political slime by getting her daughter on Dancing with the Stars. I really do believe that. It is fixed by Tea Party people and radical right-wing people, ABC, a liberal media outlet in Hollywood. Thank you and good night. And the only thing that would make me happy after that spiel would be a muffled pistol shot.
Oh, God did himself in?
Yeah, like the guy did himself in. Whoever wrote that letter, I hope they killed himself right after it. God. Another source of grievances was a hug. Another source of grievances was a hug delivered to the 20-year-old Palin by one of the show's judges, Carrie Ann Inaba. Noting that no other dancer was called over for a hug, one viewer claimed that the clinch was a signal for the GOP Tea Party supporters of Sarah Palin to stuff the vote for Bristol Palin, who on both dates had to be dragged over the dance floor, the writer said. And how would this writer know? Because he, she, it probably spends all of their time approximating ballroom moves in their one-room dingy flat. The writer added that my 96-year-old mother-in-law, so now we get an idea as to how old the writer is, well into their 70s, my 96-year-old mother-in-law can dance better than Ms. Palin. Are you saying your 96-year-old mother-in-law is a good dancer or is crippled and is embarrassing? What are you saying? Well, she dances better. Yeah, but you think Sarah Palin dances really bad. Yes, so that must mean that your 96-year-old mother-in-law is a really crap dancer, but just only slightly better. Well, you can't say that. She's my mother-in-law. Yeah, huh? I want my government to protect me, the viewer, from deceptive practices. I want my government to protect me, the taxpayer, from jackballs like this that write these letters. And I'd like to know how much salary it takes to review these letters. I'd like to know how much that's costing us, the taxpayers, to pull letters like this out of a bag and read them and take them seriously. I'd like to know how much that's costing. I want that trimmed off the federal budget. Thank you. A Cerritos, California resident reported that the physical contact made by Inaba sets the contestant up for thinking the judge will favor them. So, in other words, fueled by the internet, people who have been drinking for so many years that brain cells have actually now been, billions of brain cells have been damaged. People who have been drinking and affected possibly by some sort of a psychosis, which means that brain cells die. People who have drug problems. People who just imagine little people living in the house with them. People who don't do well with other people, but instead talk to cats and dogs. All of them writing letters to the FCC about Sarah Palin. All of those people and their letters, I want that trimmed from the federal budget. I want them trimmed from... I want those people trimmed.
What's that supposed to mean? You want them killed?
Whatever the federal government does to make people disappear, I want them disappeared. All right, President Bush gets higher job approval ratings than President Obama. Wait, really? I thought he was...
And apparently he's still president.
So President Bush is still president and Obama?
Yeah.
All right. And we'll tell you the highest paid reality show stars, meaning people that don't have to memorize lines, but just stand there and go, shut up, and then cut.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Rush Limbaugh has the right to say what he wants.
As Christians, we should be more concerned about putting Christ in people's hearts.
Before that, I felt that the middle class tax cuts
I'm not
were being
angry. I am frustrated.
I heart Jews.
Chicken crap.
That is a threat on the radio.
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch. And that means we must, we simply must go through the looking glass to places, to people, to things that other talk shows simply cannot deal with. Al Sharpton wants to take on Rush Limbaugh. I think you just heard that.
I don't know why I call him that.
Well, that's what he said. Rush Limbaugh, actually, so-called hate speech. President Bush's retrospective job approval rate is higher than Obama's current one. Plus, residents in Tulsa are fighting over a holiday parade. PhilHendryShow.com, PhilHendryShow.com for all of your joy and fun and all of that jazz. And it will be joyful and fun because later this week, if all goes according to plan, I say this week, I'm sure, we're going to be opening up our merchandise store. Very first thing for sale will be our best of, our original best of CDs. The ones that we do have, and there is a limited supply in time for Christmas. If you want a classic Best of Phil Henry 97, 98, 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004, or 2005, we've got them. And when they get in store, we'll announce on the air exactly the names of them and the different cuts. You know, we've got...
Yeah, a lot of people want to know, like, where Plane Go Boom is.
Plane Go Boom is on, I believe, I don't know, number one rated, I think.
And another one people want to know about, All You Can Eat Negro.
All You Can Eat Negro is on our first one. That's on our first one called Still on the Air. But nonetheless, we will have those announcements for you. And as we say, in time for Christmas. World famous Phil Henry show here this evening. Starting off our news hour, we do have Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard with us. Al Sharpton wants the FCC to shut down Limbaugh. I'm kidding. But, you know, if you butcher his name like that, Reverend, what am I supposed to do? Not reference it? Are you out of your mind? Limbaugh? Anyway... He wants Limbaugh's racist talk to be shut down. It's no secret that Reverend Al Sharpton isn't a fan of Rush Limbaugh. Now Sharpton's hoping the Federal Communications Commission will do something about the conservative radio host. Sharpton told MSNBC's Ed Schultz Monday he's conducting a series of meetings with the FCC to see if anything can be done to put a stop to what Schultz calls Limbaugh's racist type talk. Racist type and hate speech. We're going to see the FCC next week. We're not going to stand by and allow publicly regulated radio and television just go for marketing and promoting this kind of racism. Sharpton's upset that Limbaugh has repeatedly called Democratic policies reparations for slavery. How's that racist? Now, I understand that it's racially charged because it is saying the Democratic Party is kowtowing or the Democratic Party is you know, knuckling under to black political interest. But that's not even, that's not real racism so much as it's just an opinion about the Democrats being racist, you know?
Well, no. What do you mean Democrat being racist?
Well, wouldn't you call it racism if the Democrats were mostly concerned with policies that would affect favorably black people and nobody else?
Well, yeah, but I mean... He's saying that the Limbaugh doesn't like blacks or anything, and I think that's pretty well been proved, too.
Yeah, on account of Donovan McNabb.
That Limbaugh doesn't like blacks because of Donovan McNabb? You know that Limbaugh, to be honest with you, wasn't too far off about Donovan McNabb. Donovan McNabb ain't that great of a quarterback.
What are you talking about, man? The guy went to a couple Super Bowl.
Well, he didn't win any, and the fact of the matter is the cat ain't all that great of a quarterback. But I digress. The objective is unemployment. The objective is more food stamp benefits. The objective is more unemployment benefits. The objective is an expanding welfare state, Limbaugh said on May the 11th. The objective is to take the nation wealth and return it to the nation's rightful owners. Think reparations. Think forced reparations. Now, that's what Limbaugh said on May the 11th. On June 22nd, Limbaugh revisited the subject. Obama's entire economic program is reparations. Schultz called Limbaugh's words, Ed Schultz called Limbaugh's words racially charged hate speech. Well, racially charged is not racism. Racially charged is racially charged. Hate speech is racism. So once again, Ed, you meathead. And he noted that Republican congressmen have picked up on the theme. Representative Steve King, who's a jackass, and that's, you don't have to talk to me about Steve King. This guy, I mean, if he had a brain, he'd have it out playing with it. Argued last week on the House floor that the claims of African-American farmers and American Indians who were discriminated against in the 1980s and 1990s by the Department of Agriculture are fraudulent. We've got to stand up at some point and say, we're not going to pay slavery reparation in U.S. Congress, I say. No, he didn't talk that way, but he might as well. That's how he thinks. That's war. That war's been fought. That was over a century ago. That debt's been paid for in blood, and it was paid for in the blood of a lot of Yankees especially. And I'm Steve King, and there's not a thing I can say that has even a remote connection to intelligent discourse. I just like to take it to its extreme, and they're dancing in the streets for Obama. And I was wrong about that, but I'm still proud to be one dumbass from Iowa. God, is that guy stupid. Rush Limbaugh has the right to say whatever he wants to say, just like me do, too, said Al Sharpton. And me, too, said Steve King. And Sharpton said, mm-hmm. Steve King and Al Sharpton. Now, there's a team. Oh, my God. That'd be fantastic. I would sponsor that. I would produce that.
What are you talking about?
I'll tell you what I'm talking about. And this is one of the greatest ideas I've ever had. Al Sharpton and Steve King together. I see a 20-city tour. Medium-sized venues, tickets moderately priced, say $40, and it's just the two of those clowns up there. Actually, I don't need Al Sharpton, just Steve King by himself. And after he goes off, the bearded lady will have a juggling act, and he comes back on for the second half. What do you think?
I like it.
Start setting it up. All right, anyway, conservative blogs have been on the attack against Sharpton ever since he first told Schultz in mid-November that the FCC should take action against stations carrying Limbaugh's show. The bottom line is that the left wants to find an excuse, any excuse, to grab the mic from the man who has wreaked so much havoc on their cause, Mike Finkelstein wrote for Newsbusters. Could very well be. Let's listen now to Al Sharpton, and he had a few very pointed things to say here. The Reverend Al Sharpton telling MSNBC's Ed Schultz that he's going after Limbaugh over racist speech on the radio.
We have a series of meetings going on, and we're going to see the FCC next week. We're not going to stand by and allow publicly regulated radio and television just go for marketing and promoting this kind of racism. Here's a man who calls the president names, plays a record, calling him the good Negro, that has the former majority whip, or soon to be former majority whip, Jim Clyburn, as driving Miss Nancy, trying to play off driving Miss Daisy.
Yeah. Oh. Anyway, here is Sharpton saying Limbaugh has no right to offend the public.
Rush Limbaugh has the right to say whatever he wants to say. He does not have the right to do it, though, on publicly regulated airwaves. The FCC has a responsibility to set standards to say the public cannot be offended based on their race or their gender in this country, and use federally regulated airwaves that they give licenses to that are very competitive, and the FCC is very selective based on standards.
No, the FCC is not selective based on standards. The FCC is selected based on who, you know, sticks enough money in their envelope every week. That's the only thing I would disagree with, Reverend. The FCC does not license based upon standards. The FCC licenses based upon money. You understand? Money. When did we turn into children around here? Now, Reverend Sharpton, I do give you the, you know, first of all, I'm going to tell you this. It'll happen. It'll happen. That's the faith I have in the industry that I have given my life to. The FCC will, at some point, impose these regulations, and radio will lay down and spread for them and won't do a thing to stop them from happening, because the name of the game is money. And if it means that they'll continue to get stations licensed, if it means that they can continue to operate a signal, they'll do anything. They will do anything. I mean anything. You think I'm kidding? They'll sell their firstborn. They'll turn their daughters and their wives over to them if that's what it takes. The radio executives of America today, that is the kind of human being that we're dealing with. They'll turn their wives and daughters over to these guys if it means that they will get a radio station licensed to them. And I've got proof. I have proof. All you have to do, as we've said so many times, look at the stock prices of broadcast concerns across this country. Our companies are being run by functioning imbeciles. $1 a share, $2 a share. This is not fantasy. I'm not making this up. They don't know how to make money. They don't know what. They don't even know what business they're in. All they know how to do is get angry at talent like me and then run back to Washington like a puppy dog and get their neck scratched and their rear end scratched and, you know, stuff an envelope full of money and stick it into the G-string of some FCC commissioner and get a radio station licensed. And if Reverend Sharpton wants to get something done, I suggest that's what he do. And he probably don't need me to tell him that. You're going back to Washington, Reverend Sharpton, with all due respect, go back with a whole lot of money and you'll get whatever you want. You'll get whatever you want. Such is the corruption of that agency. Now, having said that, and I, by the way, I would invite anybody, anyone with the Federal Communications Commission to challenge what I've said. I dare you. First of all, you don't have the guts. What you would do is probably get a guy like me bumped off of radio stations or fired. That's your speed. That's what you guys do. See? You are as crooked as I have ever seen a bunch of people. And if Al Sharpton's talking about regulating speech, meaning attitudes that might be perceived as racist. Now, to the Reverend, it's very clear cut. If you say things like it's reparations to him, that's racism. To me, it doesn't sound like racism. It sounds like a pretty, you know, charged opinion. But the fact is, there's more likelihood that he's going to get what he wants than not. There's more likelihood that the Federal Communications Commission will begin to regulate speech. Because this industry that I've seen and given my life to for 37 years, there isn't a sewer that it won't crawl in. And if you think it's about Obama, they did the same thing when we had Republicans in charge. There isn't a sewer that they will not crawl through. It's a depressing time for the radio industry. And I talk about it when I go to these seminars. I talk about it. And I say, you'll notice one thing. There's no CEOs in the room here. There's no heads of companies in the room here. There's program directors. You want to know why? CEOs, they don't know anything about radio. They don't want to know anything about radio. They're not going to come to something like this. We're talking about programming philosophy or wasting our time on some other stuff. There's no guys that run companies here. I can't even say this stuff in a radio publication. It gets edited out. You would not believe, I'm telling you, it gets edited out of radio publications that I speak to when I say, look at the status of the individuals that run our industry. It gets cut out. Why? Why? I mean, hey, folks, you, when it comes to a certain kind of human being, if you want to call it an oligarchy or if you want to call it a sort of a concentration of power, whatever you want to call it, all of the rules that you think exist go out the window. There's no free speech. Where'd you ever get that idea? There's no licensing of radio stations based on standards. And when a guy like Phil Hendry, or anybody for that matter, goes is asked to give a comment to a trade publication about the status of our industry, and if anybody has a right to give an opinion about it, I do, because I've been in this business a long time, and I know a lot about it. As a matter of fact, there isn't anything about this business anybody's got anything to tell me about. Nobody's going to educate me about anything. It's the other way around. And when I give these comments, they never, ever make it into print. Never, ever make it into print. Never. Why? Because that's just too much, man. It's too heavy. It's just too much information. It's far too much to have to grapple with. The fact that the technocrats that run my industry are as incompetent a group as we've ever seen. I'm telling you, not since the guy that ran a Titanic into an iceberg have we seen such a group of people that don't know what to do with a rapidly deteriorating situation like these guys. So Al Sharpton could very well win this fight, regulating speech. Why do I say that? Because the FCC will do whatever it is that is best for the radio stations, and the radio stations are scared to death of Al Sharpton. They'll lose advertisers. Look what happened to Don Imus. They'll run back there. They'll regulate anything. They'll do anything they can to keep as much money as they can flowing into the coffers. So if it means that they go back and they, yes, sir, whatever you say, they'll do it. Believe me, they'll do it. I told you about the article that Lee Abrams wrote in Talkers Magazine, and I mentioned it in our pre-show, and I would recommend again that you read it. Lee Abrams made a statement that I'll never forget. He said, you know, there is art in radio, just like there is in television. Why is it that we're embarrassed about art in radio? Why do we consider it to be hippie stuff? Why do we consider it to be arts and crafts? What is wrong with these people? We're in 1985. He said our industry is stuck in 1985. Last time I checked, that's 25 years ago. All right, we'll be back here, or maybe not. 877-876-PHIL is our phone number, and philhenryshow.com is our website. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
And we have the top 10 singles and albums on iTunes this week, as well as last week, number one.
Just on the night.
Katy Perry, Firework. Katy Perry and Mo. And he was kissing her belly button. Number two was The Time, Dirty Bit, Black Eyed Peas. Number three, Grenade, Bruno Mars. Number four, Raise Your Glass, Pink. Number five, What's My Name, Rihanna and Drake. Number six, We Are Who We Are, Kesha. Number seven, Dog Days.
Kesha.
What did I say?
You said like Kesha. Kesha.
Kesha, that's what I said.
No, you wanted more like Kesha.
No, I didn't. I said Kesha.
Well, it sounded more like... You said that.
I know what I said, okay? Number seven, Dog Days Are Over, The Glee Cast. Number eight, Christmas Lights, Coldplay. God, I hate them. Is number nine.
That's the name of the song?
No, that's actually my... That was a statement of personal opinion. No, number nine is Bottoms Up, Trey Songz. Number ten, Hey Soul Sister, The Glee Cast. Top 10 albums, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, Kanye West, who I believe is being sued by somebody. Didn't we just see that? I don't know. Number two, The Beginning, Black Eyed Peas. Number three, Glee, the music, the Christmas album, The Glee Cast. Number four, Glee, the music, volume four, Glee Cast. By the way, I haven't seen anything quite like this since The Monkees, man. So who's making all the bread? Or, well, maybe American Idol.
Well, probably the money. What do you mean?
Who's making the bread on these album sales?
The network, man.
Thank you. Just wanted to see if you guys were paying attention. Number four, Glee. Number five, Burlesque, various artists. Number six, Pink Friday. Number seven, Loud, Rihanna. And number eight, Lungs, Florence and the Machine. But remember, number one is...
Just on the night.
Anyway. What else we got, man? Bush's job rating higher than Obama's. That's right. George Bush's job approval rating as president has spiked to 47%, according to the Gallup poll released on Monday. Now, this doesn't mean anything. If you think it means something, it doesn't mean anything. Because George Bush's approval rating as a president should only be judged when he is president, not after the fact. And that's what apparently is happening here by Gallup. They're asking, well, what do you think now of George Bush? I don't know of any poll that's ever been quite taken like that. I think it's a little asinine. It might be that the Gallup organization is getting their ass handed to them by Rasmussen and a few others, and so they've decided to come up with something really interesting and creative. Nonetheless, in my experience, the very first time in the history of man on this planet, we've decided to get a president's approval rating when he's not in office any longer. So we have George Bush at 47%. Whatever. That's 1% higher than Barack Obama. I would say that that's a pretty poor showing on the part of President Bush, as much as I like President Bush, and I did. I'd say that, what is this now, going on 3 years after he's president, he can only beat Obama by 1 percentage point, and Obama is up around 46%. Which is not bad, considering the way this guy is getting his ass handed to him every time I open up a newspaper. All right, we'll look into more of that. We also have the top earning reality stars. How much money are people who don't have to memorize scripts or really do anything other than just show up and, like, be on camera and improv some stuff? How much are they making? I mean, it's a great gig, man. We'll have it for you on the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Famous Phil Hendry Show.
You know, there's all kinds of polls, and I was losing my mind during a break. And one of the things that you miss if you don't have our video cast up is you miss me losing my mind during the breaks. And I've been losing my... The last 2 days, I've been an ass. Because I'm not going to sit here and read news stories like every other talk show host in America as if it's God's word from the mount. You know, as if down from Mount Sinai comes Moses with the word. Here it is from Politico. Really? I wipe my rear end with you, Politico. 90% of the time, what you guys report, I might as well wipe my ass with what you're doing. Now, here's a new one. This is a new one, and you guys are going to love this. Wait till you hear this. This is a new one for me. Maybe you've heard this before. If you've heard this before, please tell me. Get a load of this. Now, what they're doing now, what Gallup is doing now, and Politico's reporting this as if this is real important stuff. What Gallup, and George Bush is... and will remain one of my favorite presidents. And when I say that, people laugh, and I don't give a damn. Ask me if I care. I know why I admire people, and I know why I find fault with people, and I don't need any approval from the peanut gallery, you know. But listen to this. George Bush's job approval rating as president has spiked to 47%, according to a Gallup poll released on Monday. 2 years after the guy's president, they're still asking about his job approval rating. They're asking people, what do you think of him as a president? Are you ready for that? Now, you may think that's normal, but I am here to now inform you that no, it isn't. You may think that that makes sense. I'm here to now inform you that no, it doesn't. It makes no sense. It is, in point of fact, some kind of a device used by Gallup to stay in business. That doesn't mean anything. George Bush's approval rating... In the year 2010, he hasn't been president since 2008. Then they go on to say that's 1 point higher than President Barack Obama's job approval rating in a poll taken the same week. Well, shut my mouth. How about that? President Bush is doing a better job 2 years after the fact than President Obama's doing right now. And why am I even telling you this? Because I desperately want you to know how desperate the news gathering and news disseminating media is these days, folks. This isn't about big media brainwashing you. This is about big media going under. And if they can keep on dancing and doing the fast shuffle of the corporate boogie-woogie, brother, they're in bed. They got you, the news-consuming American. You guys don't know whether to flip or fall in it. I bet you there's about a good portion of the people listening to me tonight, with all due respect, that are going to go to work tomorrow and are going to say, hey, guess what? Bush is a point higher than Obama in a job approval rating. Well, what the hell does that mean? It means that they took a poll 2 years after the president was out of office. How do you think Bush is doing now compared to Obama? The most reactive, emotional, uninforming poll I could possibly think of is to ask people in the middle of a recession, how do you think Bush is doing? Again, as opposed to Obama. Now, this asininity doesn't just end there, ladies and gentlemen. I wish it did. It continues in a stunning, in a stunning river of mung and garbage. As they go on to tell us, get a load of this. John F. Kennedy remains the most popular modern president, with an 85% of those surveyed saying they approved of his job performance. In other words, knuckleheads that weren't even born when Kennedy was president, they give him an 85% job approval rating. How do you like that? Bill Clinton is 69%, Ronald Reagan 74%. 99% of the people that took this survey, they wouldn't know Bill Clinton and Ronald Reagan from the man on the moon. Jimmy Carter, though, he took a big hit. Here we are in 2006. 2006, that would be 26 years after he was president. He got a 61% approval rating, but now only 52%. The poll was conducted November the 19th to the 21st with a random sample. Ha! A random sample, huh, of 1,037 adults, so to speak. The margin of error is plus or minus 4%. Margin of error? Are you high on something over there at Gallup? What are you guys, seriously? Are you on heroin? Heroin. I mean it. Are you people now fully and forevermore addicted to heroin over there? Is there a drug problem at Gallup that is serious enough to necessitate the intervention of the police and drug counselors and hospitals because of the work that you are now producing at Gallup Poll makes me think that you're all heroin addicts. I kid you, man. When you come up with this kind of mung, you might as well just tell everybody, you know what, we've given up. We're waving the white flag. What we're doing now is we're creating these polls. It's eye candy. It's fun. But it doesn't really mean anything. To say that President Bush, and I love President Bush, he had a very difficult time, and I think he did well as president. And I know people mock me for that, and I could care. But the fact is, President Bush is not 47% to Obama's 46%. That has no relevance. It has no meaning. It has no, there's no substance to that at all. That's just the hallucination, the momentary, fragmentary memories of people that they were asking the questions of, going, oh, you know. And it means nothing. John F. Kennedy, having an 85% job approval rating of people that don't even know, whether he really was president or whether someone's just joking with him. That has no more meaning than if you were to ask, what do you think of Daffy Duck as president of the United States? What do you think his job approval rating would be? I bet you anything, Daffy Duck's job approval rating as president would be perhaps slightly less, but more, slightly less than Kennedy's, but more than Bill Clinton's. And Jimmy Carter taking a big hit, 61%. So the point of this is the following. When they tell you these things, what they're giving you are opinions, uninformed opinions, uninformed. I underline that word, uninformed. I can be very, very confident and tell you these are uninformed opinions. These are people, I don't know who they are or what they, but I tell you they're uninformed opinions. So they're giving you uninformed opinions of past presidents. The uninformed opinions of modern Americans in 2010. Understand, a modern American is almost illiterate when it comes to history. This is a sad and tragic reality, but we are. Very sad, very tragic, very... there's no words that describe the state of Americans today when it comes to their knowledge of history. But we're functionally illiterate. Not to mention illiterate when it comes to geography. There's very few things when it comes to those, pursuits and those disciplines that we're good at. So to ask us our opinion of any president past perhaps Obama is fruitless, or to compare presidential performance. But Gallup does it anyway. Gallup does it because we get off on seeing what we think. Gallup does it because it's a way of selling other polls, and Gallup does it because they're probably slipping next to Rasmussen and a few of the other more popular polls. So I would say this in conclusion. Polls are reflective of opinion. Opinion, like the man said, is like a you-know-what, everybody's got one. It doesn't mean that this is correct. It doesn't mean that this is a good direction. It doesn't even mean that the people that are... This is just opinion. And what we see here now is a pretty uninformed opinion. George Bush, 1 percentage point higher than Obama. Well, that's an opinion based on what? Based on what? Obama ain't even finished being president of the United States. Bush had all 8 years for people to reflect on. Then we go back to John Kennedy, who was assassinated, who was martyred, who was president for 5 years. Who has a flame, an eternal flame, burning for him at Arlington Cemetery, whose picture every time we see it is of a handsome young president with a Salem cigarette sailing out there off of Hyannis, who had the beautiful wife and the little saluting son, that Kennedy. 85%, I'm surprised it wasn't 100%. And then we have Jimmy Carter, 26 years after the fact, trips to the Middle East, Habitat for Humanity. a man who made his name as an ambassador for the United States. Sure, a guy who's liberal, but nonetheless, a man some have described as the best ex-president of the United States we've ever had. I'm surprised it's as low as 61%. Lyndon Johnson, who most people see as a hick and a hayseed and the successor to Kennedy, who would never be Kennedy, and yet he was a damn good president and a good man. 49%. And on and on and on we go. And to that, you're going to have Barack Obama having to stand there and be compared 2 years into office as president of the United States. It's a joke. And I'm going to, you know, I would like to say that I'll never read these polls again, but the fact is I might as well, because the more I tell you guys about the reality of these things, the better off you're going to be. James Hoffman, or Haman, from Politico wrote this crap. And Gerald Ford went from 60 to 61%. Now, what is that based on? What does that mean? Well, the people that voted that way couldn't even tell you. Gerald Ford was a good man, but as a president, the guy had what? He was 74. He was president for two years and 3 or 4 months, something like that. He had a constant battle on his hands with the Congress. He vetoed I don't know how many bills. The Mayaguez incident was on his watch, where he was able to save those soldiers. There was a few other things, including the 200th anniversary of the founding of our country, the Declaration of Independence. That was kind of cool. But beyond that, anyway.
So you don't want me to give you those stories anymore.
You can give them to me, man, but I'm going to just keep on ripping them like this, okay? All right, Phil Hendry Show. So we'll come back here with Kim Kardashian and Lauren Conrad and the rest of the big earning reality stars when we return here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I know she's got a great-looking ass, okay?
Yeah, do you have pictures of it?
No, I don't have pictures of it. I ain't going to talk about that. We're on the air right now, if you don't mind.
Now, that'll put a picture on a website.
I ain't putting any pictures of Kim Kardashian on a website.
You got that one nude shot.
You know something, man? That was the one nude shot, okay?
Well, you put it up.
I did not put up any nude shot of... Why don't you guys shut up? I didn't put up any nude shot of Kim Kardashian. There was a nude shot.
Yeah, but I bet you looked at it.
Everybody looked at it. She was spray-painted silver. I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but...
What happened to that?
Why don't you go ahead and Google it, man? I don't know. Anyway, besides being very lovely, Kim Kardashian is also the highest-paid reality star. What does that mean? It means they're stealing their money, is basically what they're doing. I mean, she's beautiful, and the show's really, you know, like, okay, I don't know. But talk about a great gig, man. There's no lines to read. They give you a scene, basically. If you think it's reality, it's not. What they basically say is, okay, he's going to come in, and you're going to be really upset with him because the day didn't go the way. Oh, okay, is that it? Yeah, that's what they do. If it was a reality show, they would just have the camera, and they would follow them around and see what happens. But they don't. They set the shots up. So that the actors in the reality shows can begin to feel as if they're actually actors, you know. Anyway, it pays to be a Kardashian. The three reality star sisters all made it onto the list of the top 10 earning reality television stars, which also included stars of Jersey Shore and The Hills. Kim Kardashian ranked number one on the list, earned an estimated $6 million last year thanks to her various endorsement deals, nightclub appearances, and sponsored tweets. Wait a minute.
What?
That ain't her making money off of the TV show. That's her making money off of the endorsements, nightclub appearances, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, but she's making it because she's a reality star.
No, she's not. She's making that money because she's gorgeous, and people want to look at her, and oh yeah, she's on a reality show. Bull crap. Anyway, she also sells her own Kim Kardashian-branded products, recently featured on an episode of The Apprentice, whatever those are. I guess it's... What the hell is it?
Like makeup and stuff.
Yeah, they got makeup and she got like a butt wear.
Butt wear.
She does.
She's got fashion is what she's got. The list came from news site The Daily Beast, which calculated the earnings with a group of industry professionals, agents, managers, and drug addicts, as well as using public financial reports and disclosures. At number two with $5 million is the Hill star, Lauren Conrad, who exited the show before its last season to focus on her fashion line and young adult books, including L.A. Candy. Bethany Frankel is at number three on the list with $4 million. Frankel starred in three shows this year, including Real Housewives of New York City, Bethany Getting Married, and Skating with the Stars, as well as sales from her best-selling book. The Hill star, Audrina Patridge, or Patridge. Audrina Patridge, who starred on the shows last season, as well as the most recent Dancing with the Stars, is at number four with $3.5 million. Now, here's one who is a legitimate reality TV star because she's been hanging in for a long time. Kate Gosselin earned big bucks from the TLC shows as well as her best-selling books to come up with number five, $3.5 million. That's really kind of chicken feed when you talk about, isn't it? Or maybe not. I don't know. I mean, these are cable shows, man. These are cable shows, dude. You know?
Yeah, so?
Well, how many people who are on, like, a regular Monday through Friday, you know, network sitcom are making this kind of change? You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, Kate Gosselin, man, she's been a long time on only $3 million. That ain't that much money.
Well, I don't even know. I don't know what the salaries, you know, it still has a lot of bread for cable. Anyway, so Jersey Shore star Mike the Situation Sorrentino, a real moron, stepped out of the Jersey Shore to endorse diet pills and a new exercise video, among other endorsement deals, which also includes clothing to land at number six, $3 million a year. Khloe Kardashian and Kourtney Kardashian came in at number seven and number eight thanks to their own reality show, endorsement deals, and shared profits from their licensed perfumes and clothing store. They made $2.5 million each. Pauly D. Del Vecchio of Jersey Shore earned plenty for his high-paid DJ appearances, and even at Baskin-Robbins had an endorsement to come in at number nine, $2 million, while Kendra star Kendra earned enough to come in at number 10, $2 million. So?
I don't know, man. I haven't heard of half of these people.
Kendra, man. Star of Kendra? What the hell? What kind of a reality show is that, man? I haven't seen that.
No, it's like, who, Kendra?
Yeah, Kendra. I mean, she's the star of Kendra. So, look at this. Jason writes down perfume. Like, I don't know how to pronounce that.
Man, that guy, he's in trouble, man.
Kendra was on The Girls Next Door, Playboy Playmate. Now she's in Kendra. Okay, so is she spun it off, or she's spinning out, or she's spun out, man, huh?
She's like Hugh Hefner.
Hugh Hefner?
Yeah, who's Hugh Hefner?
You mean Hugh Hefner?
My understanding was Hefner.
Who's Hugh Hefner?
Well, anyway, she's Hugh Hefner's girlfriend.
Hugh Hefner, man. His girlfriend, right? Yeah. Well, way to do it, baby. And I excuse me for calling you baby, but I'm sure Hugh wouldn't mind, Mr. Hefner. So the top 10 highest paid reality stars, Kim Kardashian, $6 million, Lauren Conrad, $5 million, Bethany Frankel, $4 million, Audrina Patridge, $3.5 million, Kate Gosselin, $3.5 million, Mike the Situation Sorrentino, $3 million. Are you ready for that? Some freaking meathead like that? And Paul Del Vecchio, $2 million. These jackasses, they were probably running their heads through brick walls for beers and shots. They were probably doing things like running their heads through bathroom doors so somebody would buy them a drink, you know?
Yeah.
Now they got $2 million bucks? Kourtney Kardashian, Khloe Kardashian, Clinky Kardashian, Claudehead Kardashian, and Claude Kardashian. And there you have it, man. That's the top 10. All right, TV ratings. The sing-off starts well, but CBS wins Monday night. How I Met Your Mother, 9.5 million viewers. Rules of Engagement, 8 million. CBS kicks ass in the 8 o'clock hour. NBC comes in second at 8.5 million. Fox, the special American Country Awards. I watch those, but that just goes to show you I don't have my finger on the pulse of anything. I may have my finger on something, but it ain't anybody's pulse. ABC, Skating with the Stars, $5 million, and the CW 90210, $2.5 million. 9 p.m., Two and a Half Men, $13 million, Mike and Molly, $11 million. The Sing-Off, number two again. American Country Awards, number three again. ABC, Skating with the Stars, number four again. Maybe you guys will give up on that Skating with the Stars. What do you think, huh? and the CW wiping up the rear with Gossip Girl. And finally, the 10 o'clock hour, CBS Hawaii 5-0, Castle on ABC 8.6 million, NBC Chase 5.1 million. CBS cleans up again with Two and a Half Men, How I Met Your Mums, Mike and Molly. Mike and Molly, I thought that show was stinking it up. Well, I guess in any event, Mike and Molly, Two and a Half Men, Rules of Engagement, Hawaii 5-0, and Skating with the Stars, No One Cares. How about that? I'm happy to see that. I really am. You know, when I was a kid, there was a show on called International Showtime. It was once a week on Saturday night, 7:30. It was a circus from different parts of the world. They would go to, they were in Prague, and then they were in New York. And I used to like it, but I used to think, boy, I bet you there's a lot of adults that just find this so irritating, they want to put a brick through the TV set, right? And I was right. My dad came in one night and put a brick through the TV set. So I'm probably the same way with that whole skating thing. Our producer is Jason Rance, technical director Charles Wygan, and our associate producer Dan Northcraft, The Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com.
Phil Hendry.